Welcome to Sports Rivals with Monty and Ernie. Lively, entertaining banter on sports topics you want to hear.
All right, everyone, wherever you are and however you may be listening, this is another edition of the Sports Rivals. That's Ernie, I am Monty, and together we are going to discuss the world of sports. I want to express our appreciation for everyone dropping a line and checking us out and listening to what we have to say. We love your guys' opinions as well, so never forget, check us out on social media, Sports Rivals Podcast on IG and Facebook, Sports Rivals Pod on Twitter. And Ernie, there's only really one place to start right now, and that's with March Madness. Although I really want to spend some time on the women's game, the championship game that happened today, let's go back and talk about the men's Final Four and preview tonight's matchup, because we are recording Sunday. This will be on Monday that we'll release this. Tonight's matchup between Purdue and UConn. It seems like it's been a full year in the making. The two best teams facing each other for the title tonight.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a... You know, with all the chaos that's happened in men's basketball this year, the constant still remains, and that's last year's defending national champion, UConn. And a little twist this year with Purdue, having the two-time NCAA Player of the Year in Zach Edey finally represent, going from one and done to a possible national championship. You couldn't write it any better for any Purdue fan, being that it's been over 50 years since the Purdue Boilermakers have been in a championship game. So, and the ways that they got through was, amazing. I mean, Purdue kind of skated their way, and I thought they were dominating the early rounds. Zach Edey now has a chance to beat Glenn Rice as far as total points in an entire tournament. He needs a subpar average game in order to do that. And UConn's just been destroying the competition, acting like the big brother, to all their, weak siblings out there, and just dismantling them. Although Alabama, in that Final Four game, kept the UConn fans a little nervous until the end.
Yeah, I mean, I thought so. Let's go to that game real quick. I thought it was good for UConn to experience a little bit of adversity. I think Alabama shot the lights out in the first half, and it does. Ernie and I were talking off the air. You're playing in this dome that not only is it so cavernous and so huge, but you have a sunlight at the top of the dome. So in that first games, it was daytime, and the lighting just seems so odd for an indoor stadium. Clearly that usually impacts teams, and it seemed to impact three of the four teams, but it did not impact Alabama in that first half. Alabama goes off shooting 7 of 11 from the three-point line, kept the game close just like Illinois did, but unlike the Illinois-UConn game, UConn could not go on a 30-0 stretch. Alabama's just too scrappy, kept finding a way to keep it reasonably close. And although the final score ended up being a double-digit victory, it was closer. The score was not indicative of how close that game
exactly
was. Alabama
exactly
gave them a hard rub, and they should be extremely proud of their NCAA tournament.
Well, yeah, Sears and Nelson, I have a newfound respect, especially for Nelson, the tournament that he's had. I mean, he's shown that he can play with the big boys, and it sounds like he's returning next year.
Yeah, I mean, it would be great for him to return. I mean, Sears could come back as well. For somebody like Sears, who I think is an absolute Jalen Brunson clone, they play similarly, they look similarly, their builds are similar, they're leaders, he hits clutch shots. If he really wants a chance at a national championship, then you can come back. Because if they bring back the core of that team, they're going to be right there at the top of the NCAA when the start of the season. But I'm not sure it's worth it for him to come back for a fifth year. It depends. I mean, I guess with NIL, he's a fringe draftable player on that first round, second round fringe. I would take him. I would love to have somebody like him on the Lakers. I just think he's a scrappy, tough, strong, clutch.
He's clutch
player, and I don't think he's going to be a superstar. He's not going to be Austin Reeves by any stretch, but I do think he's going to be successful. So anyway, that's Alabama. On the Purdue side, I think if you're a Purdue fan, you kind of hang your hat on what happened to Virginia in 2018. They lost as a one seed to a 16 seed, came back the following year, won the national championship. Purdue is trying to do the exact same thing, 6.5-point line. I'm excited for this game. I mean, I'm going to be cheering for Connecticut because I picked them in my bracket to win it, and I want to move up into the top three in our bracket. Always fighting, scrapping to the end. That's how we do it. But it's such an intriguing matchup. It's the most intriguing matchup, I think, considering everything. Maybe Kansas and North Carolina 2 years ago had the more cachet names. But I think anytime you have a dominant team like Connecticut going for a back-to-back championship and a two-time national player of the year who's been as dominant as we have seen in the college level because of his size and girth, it makes for compelling TV. So it remains to be seen how many people are going to tune in. Of course, this is on TBS and not on network TV. I think they're going to go north of 20 million. They haven't had a $20 million viewing audience since Gonzaga, North Carolina, also in this same arena back in 2017. Last year's matchup, although it was UConn and San Diego State, probably the least attractive matchup in recent memory, had less than 15 million viewers. I believe they're going to go north of 20 million. But many believe, Ernie, as we transition here to the women's championship, that today's matchup between Iowa and South Carolina is going to draw a bigger audience than the men's championship tomorrow night. I personally think, like I just said, the men are going to be north of 20 million. I'm not sure the female championship was going to get to that number. Although you got to give credit. I mean, it's just a year ago, the highest rated women's game was 6 million people. Then last year, the championship game against LSU went to 10. Now this year, the Elite Eight game against LSU and Iowa goes to 12. Then the Final Four game between Iowa and UConn goes to 14.3. The most watched basketball game, men or women, college or NBA, in the history of ESPN, happened the other night. Today, network TV on ABC, I expect 17 to 18 million, maybe 20. The amount of eyeballs is incredible. But I think the men are going to still outdraw them tomorrow night. But we got to talk a little bit about the women's game.
Okay, let's do that, and we can circle back in regards to what we think about in that championship game. But yeah, today's game, championship game with Caitlin Clark. I mean, she started out like a Hellcat. I mean, 18 points in that first quarter. Keeping the Carolina Gamecocks on their heels, but a little too much of the Brazilian Cardoso at the end. I mean, she just dominated the boards. I think she had like 17 rebounds, 15 points, something like that, to add to that stat line. And it was just a little too much. They held Clark to only 12 points after that outburst in the first quarter. And, that was all she told, but good. If they were to lose to anybody, that Iowa team, being the following that Caitlin Clark has brought to this game of women's basketball, I'm glad it happened to a Dawn Staley team.
Yeah, Dawn Staley is just unbelievable. But getting back to the game, like you talked about, it was a physical mismatch. South Carolina, as hot as Iowa was to start the game, and they had jumped out to a 20-9 lead, it still was where South Carolina was basically shooting until they made a shot, because they were dominating the offensive rebounds. Rebounding in general, I think they doubled up on Iowa in the game. Their length, the 6'7 Cardoso, but Pitts as well. Everybody, Watkins, Hall, they were dominating, and it was just a physical mismatch. And what I didn't realize about South Carolina is they go 9 deep with 5 stars, and it was just waves of people, and they just rotated their people 1 through 9. And when South Carolina is hitting, last year against Iowa in the semifinal, where Iowa knocked them off with 5 WNBA players getting drafted off of that team, Iowa knocked them off last year. They were 4 of 21 from 3-point range. Today was a completely different story. I think they were 50% from 3-point range. Freshman Tessa Johnson, when I believe she hit 3 in the second half. Joel Salavea's niece, Pau Pau, hit 3 three-pointers as well. They were hitting their shots. They were the better team. It was clear. It wasn't even close. The fact that it was a relatively close game is a testament to Caitlin Clark. But I think bench scoring ended up 40-0, Ernie. 40-0, South Carolina's bench outscored the Iowa bench. Iowa clearly ran out of gas. Once South Carolina kind of took control there in the third quarter, Iowa put on a little burst to get it back to 2 at 57-55, only to see it stretch back out. And at the end, Caitlin Clark was just throwing up shots out of desperation. It finishes 87-75. South Carolina completes an undefeated season at 38-0. They've now lost one game in the last 2 years, 2 of the last 3 national championships. Dawn Staley's record over the last 3 years is 108-3 with 2 national championships. Just an incredible, incredible team and situation. And only Camila Cardoso is leaving for the WNBA. The other rest of the team is coming back, plus the number 2 ranked recruit in the nation is coming to South Carolina. So at this point, there's no reason why they don't start number one next year again.
Yeah.
But an incredible season for South Carolina. Too bad the Cinderella conclusion for Caitlin Clark doesn't happen. But I think the fact that she got this Iowa team to back-to-back national championship games, although she lost both, is a testament to her ability.
Oh, yeah.
And the NCAA women's game is surely going to miss her.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think no matter how much it was watched this year, I know it's almost like a spectacle. I mean, that's how I viewed it. I tried to watch. I'm not a women's basketball fan by any stretch of the imagination. I appreciate how they are athletes on the floor, but my curiosity started and ended with Caitlin Clark. I mean, she's that much of a spectacle. And I think when she leaves next year, I think it's back to you got to find another star. And I hope and pray that that she becomes a star in the WNBA, because that league sure does need a shot in the arm.
Yeah, so we're going to talk a little bit about that, because I think that's so compelling. That was most of the narrative for much of the afternoon, for those of you that are Twitter addicts, as I have become during this tournament, just participating and listening. Now, I think there are some starts. Paige Beckers from UConn is an absolute dynamite. She is coming back. You have Juju at USC, who is a freshman. You have the entire South Carolina team, Flauje Johnson, the a la rapper from Rock Nation and America's Got Talent at LSU. She'll be back. But do they have the compelling nature of Caitlin Clark to galvanize everyone? They're amazing players. But Paige Beckers is... It would not surprise me if Paige Beckers becomes a better WNBA player than Caitlin Clark, because she's much more well-rounded, a little bit more athletic. So I wouldn't be shocked if that becomes the case, but her personality, her style, her game is not box office. And I think that's what separated Caitlin Clark. Logo shot after logo shot, unbelievable passing and vision from her to her teammates. It was those types of things that made her box office. And I'm not sure that translates as awesome as Juju Watkins is and Paige Beckers is. I'm not sure how they play or what they do. Their games are much more similar to the Maya Moores and the Brianna Stewarts and the Shamika Holdsclaws and the Cheryl Millers from long time ago. Unbelievable players. Just not box office. They're not doing something spectacular that makes the average fan want to watch something they ordinarily would never consider watching.
Exactly. I mean, that's, you got to be record breaking. Like, Caitlin was. I mean, that's what she was. She was record breaking. And Paige, for all her prowess, there was, I mean, her injury really held her back. I mean, she started off very well as a freshman. Her injury came. Now Caitlin Clark picked up the mantle from there. Now she has to do it again next year. She was overshadowed this year, even though she is a very talented player. But yeah, she's coming from way back. To bring it back in 1 year, that's going to be a little difficult. For Caitlin, it was a buildup, like you said, off the air. It was a four-year buildup, which culminated in Iowa going to two national championship games. UConn can do it. I mean, that's a storied program. The most storied program to me in women's college basketball, at least, in this millennia. It's gonna have to be someone else other than Paige, in my opinion. I don't think
Paige. Well, she doesn't want it. She already said, "I hope I'm not gonna get all this attention next year. Let's spread it around a little bit." Who does? I mean, as much attention as Caitlin Clark has gotten, with that positivity and attention comes the other side, comes the hate. And that's what I wanted to spend a little bit of time. Dawn Staley is 100% class. I put out on Twitter that I believe she's ready to coach at the NBA level. I think she's that good at X's and O's. Now, I think she's too good for women and what she's doing for these women and making an impact. But I think from a mental X and O standpoint, I think she's that good as a tactician. But she said it best. Thank you to Caitlin Clark. We're all going to miss you. But she was in the minority. Most of the WNBA players that were vocal, Diana Taurasi came out and said she's going to have a rude awakening when she comes to the league. And she's not the only one. I just think that if they're going to be hell-bent on trying to stop her, I think they're going to cost themselves money. Because if Caitlin Clark goes to the WNBA and is a star, she ain't going to average 32 and 10. She's not going to do that. But if she's a star, a 20.9 assist type of a star in the WNBA, she's going to keep some of those eyeballs that are now on her, which means the WNBA ESPN contract could double the next time it comes around. They need her to be a star. So be careful about trying to be hell-bent on stopping her at all costs, because all you're going to do is take money out of your own pocket.
Oh, yeah, I definitely agree. And double is minimal height. I think this thing can quadruple, considering what the NBA, WNBA has been doing recently. Caitlin is your Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan savior of that league. Right now, that league needs saving. All the players have been complaining about fair play without even recognizing, hey, you got to look at the economics. You got to look at what revenue you're coming in. And a shared revenue program, right now you're in the red. Your league might not even exist without the NBA subsidizing it right now. So, don't bite the hand that can possibly feed you for years to come. We saw it in golf with Tiger Woods. Like I mentioned, the aforementioned Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan. I don't see it. All I see, even though I respect those names that you mentioned, it sounds like that UConn loss that was at the hands of Caitlin Clark kind of burned them a bit.
Yeah, I mean, and again, Ernie and I talked about this off the air as well. I mean, it gets to the point where you build somebody up, and then once they get to a certain point, you start to tear them down. And that seems to be what's happening with Caitlin Clark. The bottom line is this: she never won a championship, but she is unquestionably one of the greatest women's college basketball players of all time, and unquestionably the biggest attraction in NCAA women's basketball history.
Yeah.
Professional or college.
No doubt.
No one has galvanized the attention on the sport like Caitlin Clark did. And that's going to be a benefit to women from now and for the next 40, 50 years. They owe her a bit of gratitude instead of throwing some shade at her. So yeah. Congratulations, Caitlin Clark. You had a phenomenal career. I personally enjoyed watching you for the last 2 years. I never wanted to watch women's basketball until you, and I recorded your games this year and watched them. more than the Lakers or anyone else. Wow. It was amazing. So again, that's Ernie Iamonte. Let's transition back. Ernie, I think I know where you're going to go with this because we both picked UConn. Give me a score for tomorrow night's matchup now that we know it's Purdue and UConn.
Boy, score is going to be tough because here's the thing. This comes down to Zach Edey versus Dan Hurley and what Dan Hurley does to mitigate Zach Edey's prowess. If Dan Hurley wins on that category, I see a double-digit win. It's right now currently at 6.5 points. I think they easily double that. This could be a boring game in the second half if Dan Hurley wins that matchup. If Zach Edey has a game and UConn plays down, let's just say that, you know, they do an Alabama type of game where, you know, they keep it close. I think Edey's prowess enough can make it very close. I don't see the opposite happen. I'd be shocked if Purdue wins this game by like 7 or more. I'd be shocked. It'd be more likely that UConn, blows this game out. But I'm really interested on how that Klingman-Edey matchup works. The NBA scouts have already projected Klingman to be the higher
pick now.
The higher pick.
Yeah.
So and he should be. He's more athletic. He's a 7-2 center on last year's national championship team. Zach Edey has vaulted up that draft ladder, you know, from being a second round pick all the way into the first round, and depending on who you want to listen to, even as high as a lottery pick. So I'm no scout. But if there's some GMs projecting that to happen, then there's something that I must not know. He can do it at the college level. I'm not sure he can do it at the NBA, but we're talking about the national championship game, and he's been dominating that facet, like I said, through this entire tournament. So we'll see on top of that. If you want to nail me down to a score, I'm going to say this is going to be low scoring. I'm going to say it's going to be total points under 140. I'll give you 75. No, not 75. I'll give you 72-60. Yeah, 72-60.
Okay, 72-60. So originally we had both Houston and UConn in the final. And right. I think I had 77-72. I think UConn's going to get to 80, and I think Purdue's going to get to 70. So I'll go 80-70. I think Connecticut is going to win this game. I think the template has been set. You know, the last two games, Tennessee held Purdue to 72. They let Edey get his. They controlled everyone else. NC State, 63-50. They held them to 63. Edey had only 22 points and 12 rebounds, so they kind of controlled him, and they controlled everybody else, but Jones had a few big threes. The template is there. I think Connecticut, but you have to be able to outscore them, and that's something that Tennessee and NC State could not do. I think UConn can.
Easily.
UConn has so many weapons starting, and all five guys can score in the starting lineup. Then the good three or four guys off the bench can score. You know, this is, in my mind, this is becoming much more similar to the women one today. I think Connecticut is South Carolina, and I think Purdue and Zach Edey, the two-time National Player of the Year, is the Caitlin Clark and Iowa. I think UConn wins their second consecutive championship, 80-70, tomorrow night.
Yeah, I mean, but good run for Purdue, and if you're a Purdue fan, I'd be very proud. I picked Purdue do well last year. They burned me.
And so, Ernie does not forgive and forget.
I don't forget. I mean, I was just intrigued by, you know, the mountain of a man that Zach Edey was, and I thought they'd go far. And this year I did the total opposite. I bet against them. But this Purdue team, the surrounding pieces around him are a lot, they're more mature. They're basically the same criminals out there, if you want to call it that, but they're much more mature. You know, they know the game better. I guess you can say that they've been through it's their second time in the rodeo or third time in the rodeo, depending on how many, you know, how far you're going back. And it's complemented Zach Edey's game. But I just think UConn is just a different animal. I think the coaching, from a coaching standpoint, I think Dan Hurley is the standard right now. I mean, if I am not a Dan Hurley fan. And that's just because he's a Hurley, you know. But you got to give this guy the props. I think he's the best college coach right now.
All right, so speaking of coaches, before we get out of NCAA basketball, I'll talk a little bit of NBA. Breaking news right now, Kentucky yep. head coach John Calipari is going to be the next head coach at the University of Arkansas. Shocking news. There was a lot of talk after Kentucky's exit to Oakland, a lot of negativity in regards to John Calipari and what is perceived as not hitting the standard of Kentucky and his unwillingness to really change his ways of always going for the best. He's still a great recruiter. He had six guys come in last year that are NBA caliber. He has four more guys that were scheduled to come in this year from Kentucky. But that type of play has not translated recently since the transfer portal era where you're playing with 24-year-olds. So John Calipari apparently out at Connecticut by his own volition to Arkansas, where apparently he has a longstanding relationship with an Arkansas booster, the Tyson family from Tyson Chicken. You may have heard of them. Wow. Who's going to be the next coach at the University of Kentucky, Ernie?
I don't know, but if you're a Kentucky fan and you're one of those people who wanted to call up prior, I think you're an idiot. I mean, how are you supposed to recruit? How are you supposed to bring in these guys? And like you said, how many first-round picks did this guy develop? 30-something, 35, I believe, was mm-hmm. was the number that you put out. How... I just don't get it. If you recruit these guys and they don't become first-round draft picks, and the only reason why they become first-round draft picks is because you develop them by having them play in the games, but they're minors, you know, considering with the transfer portal over the past several years are keeping a lot of seniors in the game and transferring it to even out the playing field. That's a formula that if you don't want Calipari to do that, You're crazy because he's not going to get the recruits. If you're a five-star recruit and you're already bringing in like two McDonald's All-American, but you know what? You're going to have to fight for your position because I'm going to play this senior who's been here for the last 4 years. He knows the game plan. I know you'll know the game plan, but I want you to learn another year or two. And you're this five-star recruit thinking, oh, hell no. I'm just going to go to another school then. Then what does your program look like? You can't have your cake and eat it too, in my opinion. So if you're, you know, good for John Calipari. If you're a Kentucky fan, you better find somebody good, man, because I think you're going to be missing John Calipari hell of a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I have a slightly different take. I do believe that John Calipari is by far the greatest
recruiter.
He's an incredible recruiter, and he prepares his players for the NBA. And I think that's why he's become a consistently great recruiter, because he's doing the right thing for the kid. And the good kids are going to the NBA, and they're not only going to the NBA, they're thriving.
Oh, yeah.
Seven of them were in the All-Star game this year, and that didn't include people like De'Aaron Fox, who was left out. And Julius Randle, who was injured. So they are loaded with talent. The problem is, I think that's not congruent with the Kentucky fan base. I honestly don't think the Kentucky fan base really gives a rip how many players are going into the NBA. They could care less about that. They're not benefiting at all from those players going to the NBA. They want national championships. And the performance of the team on the floor is not up to what Kentucky fans clamor. So you look at the championship game this year. Edey's been there for 4 years. Purdue returned everybody from that team. They're better this year. UConn, they lost three guys, but they've built a solid foundation where Klingham steps up, Caravan steps up, they bring in a Spencer, Newton steps up, all of these guys that came back. That's what I think Kentucky's looking at, the fans. That's what they're looking at and being like, we want that. That seems to be the recipe for success. I could care less if we have six number one picks coming in. They're all going to leave and we lose to Oakland in the first round. That doesn't do us any good. I think that's where the rubber met the road with the Kentucky fans losing patience with this model. No doubt he did well by his players, and that was his selling point. My focus is on the players and getting them to the NBA. And I think the Kentucky fans are like, what about us? Your focus should be winning national championships, not bringing in one-year players and getting them to the NBA. Getting them to the NBA should be a byproduct of winning a national championship. And I think that's where the dichotomy took place. But you're right. They're certainly going to regress because they have so much talent there now. I'm guessing all of his players that he recruited is going to go to Arkansas. Maybe the ones that are there are going to decide to turn pro. Maybe they'll go to Arkansas on the transfer portal. You know, who knows? It's too early to be saying. So in the short run, I think Kentucky's going to see a depleted roster in terms of talent. But it's going to be really interesting to see what kind of coach they can get. The problem is they're so late in the game now. Some of the major young, hot coaching names are already in place. So it'll be really, really interesting to see if Kentucky can pry Ron Gannat out of the University of Hawaii. Or that could be something that we have to deal with. Or something like a Billy Donovan, bringing him back from the college to the college game. Although I don't think anyone from the pros are going to come back to college anymore, because the college game is just so much work. It's so hard to constantly recruit. But huge breaking news. John Calipari, seemingly the next coach of Arkansas. Razorbacks lose their coach. Musselman went to USC. USC's coach went to SMU. So the coaching carousel is in place. Now the big question is, who goes to Kentucky?
Yeah, that's going to be. I mean, there's a number of young head coaches out there. We were mentioning off the air. I like New from GCU, even though he struggled in his prior residency at Vanderbilt. I mean, he's built that program where they've been to back-to-back NCAA, and they previously had none prior to that. You know, had their first NCAA win this year. He might be a coach. His brother, at Baylor.
I think that's going to be the target.
He might be, because
the way he coaches Baylor is what I think the Kentucky people are clamoring for. When they won their national title, weren't they all seniors? Mm-hmm. Gerard Butler and Mitchell. Yep. And I think that's what they're clamoring for is national championships. And Drew has been a consistent winner.
Yeah. So if that's the model that they want, then, you know, you could, but like you said, there's going to be regression because you're not going to have that. You're not going to have right now. Kentucky, I believe, has at least a top three recruiting class this year. That's going to go on the wayside.
Yeah.
You know, definitely. Good luck trying to make the NCAA tournament next year, in my opinion. And boy, to me, winning national championships is difficult, man. You got a lot of, especially the landscape nowadays with the transfer portal. Now the NBA Ignite is folded. Now you got more players that is going to be going through the talent level is going to be increasing. It's going to be difficult, Kentucky fans. I'm sorry.
It is, and maybe we can get some of these Kentucky players to transfer to the University of Hawaii. We can be Kentucky West. We can only dream. All right, let's transition to the NBA. We spent a lot of time on the NBA, but you know what? They deserve this amount of time. We're talking about history in terms of the women's game and a historical matchup tomorrow night in the men's game. And now a historical situation with Kentucky's coach leaving. So we spent a lot of time on college basketball. I think it warranted that. In the NBA, we are down to the last week or so. My Lakers were on a roll. Today, LeBron sits out. Anthony Davis gets poked in the eye in the first half, sits out the rest of the game. And Minnesota romps the Lakers. sending the Lakers back to number nine. So, Ernie, let's go to the West, because in the East, your Celtics are in cruise control. They lead by like 700 games over the second seed. So it really doesn't matter. But in the West, as we speak right now, there's a tie at the top with Denver and Minnesota. You like the Minnesota situation. But again, fascination at the bottom. Houston was eliminated, so Golden State is in. Between the sixth seed in Phoenix and the ninth seed in the Lakers, only a game and a half separates you from 9 to 6 with 3 or 4 games left. How do you see this shaping up in the West in terms of who will be the 7, 8, 9, 10?
Boy, I really like a push from the Lakers. Like I said from the beginning, I think the Lakers are built for the playoffs. Once they get into the playoff, I think that that tandem of AD and LeBron is going to do damage. And if, you know, they get a favorable matchup with OKC, I think that's a Memphis situation from last year, and that's what the Lakers used to propel them. So, in my opinion, if the Lakers, if they can get into the sixth seed and get that matchup against OKC, I think that would do them wonders. But they're going to that's basically one game. You know, I don't know how the tiebreakers work out, so it might be two.
Well, the Lakers have the tiebreaker over Phoenix, and the Lakers have the tiebreaker over the Pelicans.
Not Sacramento.
Sacramento beat us all 4 times.
Okay, so they're going to have to jump against... They just got to get ahead of Sacramento and match games with Phoenix and New Orleans, which is basically one game.
Well, we end the year at the Pelicans, so we'll have our shot at trying to beat them one-on-one. Today, for the Lakers, they took care of business yesterday against the Cleveland Cavaliers. You kind of felt like on a back-to-back against Cleveland and Minnesota, a split is probably what we're going to get. Obviously, LeBron thought so by sitting out today. So I think the Lakers got what they want. Now they have to close with 3 victories if they have any chance. And it's Golden State first, and then at Memphis, at New Orleans. I think the Lakers can win all 3.
I think so, too. I mean, Golden State, 7-3. They're playing the best right now, other than the Lakers. And the Lakers are 9-1 in their last 10. Golden State, by necessity, 7-3 in their last 10. Now you're talking about Sacramento, Phoenix, Sacramento and New Orleans, 500 at best in their last 10. I think they got the momentum on their side for that. I think they can do it.
With Sacramento, Ernie, they go to the Thunder on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And hopefully SGA will be back, because he hasn't played yet in April. He sat out April so far. He's supposed to be possible for that game there if OKC can knock off the Kings, because the Kings then go home for the Pelicans, the Suns, and the Trailblazers. So they're going to knock each other off in some combination. But the fact that they're all 3 of the teams in front of the Lakers are playing each other is going to create a situation where if we take care of business and they take care of each other, there's a chance that we can leap up there. However, I think it's probably more likely that Sacramento remains ahead. I think the best that the Lakers can hope for is passing the Pelicans, being 7-8 with the Kings in some way, shape, or form, and having the Pelicans drop to 9, the Warriors 10, and then the Lakers would then have to beat Sacramento, and if they don't, then at least they'd have another chance against Golden State or the Pelicans, and I think they would survive that one, meaning they would be the 8 seed heading into tournament.
And to me, that makes
a disaster.
Yeah, that makes no sense. That makes no sense whatsoever. To me, they have one goal only. They got to be playing championship basketball now, and that's to get into the 6th seed. They can survive in the 7th seed. Their matchup with Minnesota, I mean, today was relatively close without LeBron and AD being injured. So I think they can match up relatively well with Minnesota. But they get into that matchup with Denver, I think that series is one and done. Hopefully they can have a better showing than they did last year when they got swept.
So like with Phoenix, listen to the Phoenix close to the season. They play the Clippers back-to-back. Okay. They play in Phoenix first, then in LA, then they go to Sacramento, then they close at Minnesota. Wow. In a much win. So Phoenix could easily go 2-2, maybe worse, with this schedule to close. So I do think that the Lakers have a chance. Again, it's going to be interesting. I as long as they don't match up with Denver, I think we have a fighting chance against everyone else.
Yeah.
Including Minnesota, as long as we're healthy.
Yeah.
If we match up against Denver, it's going to be kind of all she wrote. In the East, Miami now has dropped all the way to 8. It looks like it's going to be Philadelphia and Miami in that 7-8 matchup. The 9-10 matchup, who cares? They're so far back.
Yeah.
You know, the Bulls and the Hawks, I don't think either of them are going to get in. So I do believe the Sixers and the Heat are going to eventually get in. How do you see that play-in going?
Yeah, I mean, Indiana at one point last week was, you know, in that play-in standing. They beat the Miami Heat today. That Miami Heat just got back Tyler Hero. It was a close game. I believe it was a 2-point win or something like that for the Indiana Pacers. But out of all those teams, I would not want to play Indiana. Indiana, for some reason, they get up for the Boston Celtics, and the Boston Celtics, for one reason or another, just think that they can play their B game and win that matchup. They scare me out of the most. I don't mind playing Miami this year. They don't have the key role players they had last year when they went on that incredible run. The Atlanta Hawks, even though they won two, one was they had to come back from 30, and the other one they thought they had it in the bag. I discount those two losses. The Chicago Bulls, I believe they swept them this year. And I would love to play Philadelphia with an Embiid who's been out for basically the last 3 months. I don't think he's going to have the legs to withstand a 7-game series against the Boston Celtics. So I think they're sitting pretty if the standings remain the way they are. If for any reason the Pacers get into that play-in tournament, I'd be a little bit concerned, just for the reason the fact that I believe that they could be this year's Miami.
Yeah, I'm not seeing that. I still believe Boston is going to go 12-0. I honestly think they're going to go 12-0, unless they choose not to. But they seem to not be the same Boston team of years past, of taking the foot off the gas. I don't see anyone that can come close to them here. When they're fully focused and they're healthy,
oh yeah,
I don't see anyone. I mean, at worst, they're going to go 12-2 in this playoff stretch,
yeah,
in my opinion.
I don't think they're going to go undefeated, because they have a tendency, when they go up big, we saw it with the Lakers, with the LeBron and AD. We saw it with the Atlanta Hawks 2 weeks ago. They can go on to cruise control. So, but yeah, I mean, I would
Milwaukee's falling off a cliff.
I wouldn't even rank them in the top three right now. I think they're the Orlando Magic.
And if that's going to be the team that you have to worry about,
yeah,
Orlando would lose to every single team in the West in the playoffs.
Milwaukee is struggling right now. They are 3-7 in their last 10. They've
lost 4 in a row. They're not playing well at all. It wouldn't shock me if they're a first round exit.
If Philadelphia is their matchup,
or the Heat.
Maybe the Heat
knocked them off last year.
Could be. I would fear Philadelphia more. I would take Philadelphia versus Milwaukee. Miami, if that became the matchup, I think that's a toss up. But Milwaukee is not going to survive these playoffs.
And then the news came out, Randle has not coming back. He has season-ending shoulder surgery. So the Knicks have been so valiant this year with just basically Jalen Brunson, DiVincenzo, Josh Hart. It's like the Villanova team.
Yeah.
And yet they're still competitive. I give credit to
Thibodeau,
because they are a tough, scrappy bunch, but they do not have the horses to compete with the Celtics with all these injuries.
No, and Cleveland, Mitchell is still not 100%, and there's reason to believe that he may not even be a Cavalier next year. So there's that hanging over his shoulders. So yeah, it's open for Boston. I don't think they go. It would be nice that they go 12-0. They can rest their people, but I've seen them too many times take their foot off the gas pedal. My goodness.
Well, it's not. What has it happened? Like once before that's ever happened. So, but I just think they're so far better than everyone else. And I don't think that. I don't remember the last time. It was probably Jordan that.
16-0.
Not just that. That you knew that they were so much better than everyone else that you don't even think that. There's a chance that they're not going to be in the finals.
Guys, this is how big. It's been 54 years that an NBA team has had better than a 15-game lead going into the season. It's been that
to the
long.
End of the season.
Yeah. That's how dominant the Celtics have been in the East. 50-something, even the Golden State Warriors from 2016 that won 73 games, even the Chicago Bulls in the 90s didn't have that big of a gap. It was your Lakers back in the 1960s or 70s or something like that that had a bigger gap. I believe they had like a 17-game gap between first and second place. Where if you go into the West, 15 games right now from first place to... would be the Houston Rockets versus the Denver Nuggets.
Yeah.
That's the difference between Boston Celtics and the Milwaukee Bucks.
Now, I think Boston has had a great, great, great season, and I think they're sitting pretty to get to the finals, but I think that is more a testament in how weak the East is versus anything else. Because they're able to completely dominate them. But they're having a phenomenal season, and I think Ernie's going to be happy, which is very sad for me.
Yeah, it is, and just knowing they did this with their starting five only playing 35 games together.
That's what happens when you have four total studs and you can just rotate them because you have 15 games. It's crazy. So my top five, I continue to say it really doesn't matter, but I'll do this. Boston 1, Denver 2, Minnesota jumps to 3. OKC has been struggling without SGA. I'll keep them in at 4. Dallas to me will be 5. If Lakers had held on today, I would have kept them as my number 5 because they're playing just as well as anyone else.
They are.
But I think Dallas is ahead of us right now. Dallas is also won 9 out of 10. Too late for Luka to catch Joker for the MVP. But Dallas is playing really, really well right now.
Yeah, and I have Boston number 1, Denver number 2, Minnesota 3. I have Dallas at number 4, and I have actually the Clippers at number 5. OKC without SGA is just a different team. They've been only playing 500 ball since he's been out. I know it's a season ranking, but right now at this point in time, they are not a top 5 team.
Oh, yeah, not without SGA.
Yeah.
You have to assume that he'll come back healthy, though. All right, so that wraps up our NBA talk. Next week, don't forget, we are going to have our NFL draft show. We're going to give you our best thought on the first round. I'm excited about that because there's a lot of talk. Things could happen in all kinds of different ways. It's not really locked in stone other than Caleb Williams.
Yeah.
After that, it could go in a lot of different directions. So I'm going to have fun with my pick. I'm not going to go the standard. I'm not going to try to outsmart everyone. I'm going to have fun with who I think should be drafted. Yeah,
and this year is going to be quite interesting because in years past, we did it like the week prior. You know, we get more actual information instead of all these smoke screens that are probably happening right now in regards to which team is picking which. And we've done relatively well. I think I tracked my draft over the last 2 years, and I think I've done better than Kuiper. You know, for all the millions ESPN gives him, send a couple this way as a sponsor.
Yeah, so we're excited about that. That, again, will be next week. But before we close the show, we're going to turn this back over to Ernie for his closing thought.
Yeah, and there are a number of things that I was going to talk about, but I'm going to just keep this with basketball. I don't want to get too controversial here with other topics and how they may develop later on. But I'm going to talk about Jaylen Brown, forward for the Boston Celtics, the highest played basketball player next year. His contract, he signed it this past offseason, becoming the first player in NBA history to have a $300 million contract. My thought on that is that he's been having such a terrific year, his best season in the NBA so far, but I think that double-edged sword is going to be kicking in when Jason Tatum gets his contract and becomes the highest NBA player of all time. With the fact that the Boston Celtics still have to renegotiate contracts with both Derek White, Drew Holiday, and a number of other players that they want to keep in their core. I believe Sam Hauser, the seventh man in their rotation, is also going to be a guy who they might even want to consider extending. The thing is, with the new collective bargaining agreement, the CBA coming being implemented to full force in the next couple of years, the Boston Celtics will be stranded. Jaylen Brown is my favorite player on the Boston Celtics. I think I've mentioned that maybe a couple of times. But I believe that within the next 2 years, I think his success will lead to him being traded, going someplace else. I think that has no play in regards to whether or not they win the championship this year or not. It's just the numbers game. I believe keeping him on this roster and just gutting it with all the, all the, I guess, position players, that they have right now with Porzingis, Holiday, and Derek White is going to be too much. They've showed in the past when it's just been Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown that it's just they couldn't get over the hump. I believe that Jaylen Brown will be that trading piece to bring in maybe another quality player. Hope the other players develop around him, the younger players develop around him, and bring in those draft choices. I believe he'll at least command 3 first-round picks, at least in my opinion. Like I said, I think he's been playing his best basketball, so far this year. He's relatively young. He just turned 28, I believe. So he's still got, he's just entering his prime. But just this numbers game is just going to be just too much for the Celtics to handle. I think Brad Stevens is going to shock us in the next, not this year and not next year. And I mean, not next year, but maybe the year after that or the year after that. They're going to have to do something with the contracts. I mean, if they sign Drew, and if they sign Derek White, I think it's a foregone conclusion that it's going to happen. And I think right now that, with all the success that the Boston Celtics have had, Jaylen Brown included, that the iron is hot right now for him. I think he's got the most trade value right now. There's going to be a lot of developing teams that may want him. I see OKC with all those draft choices trying to get him, although I wouldn't trade him to OKC because I believe they're going to remain a top, team in the West. You're not going to get great draft picks for him for that. Another one would be Houston, but they're also climbing the ladder. I don't know how well they're going to be bumped up the ladder. And who knows? I'd hate for another Eastern Conference team to pick him up. I just can't see playing against Jaylen Brown 3 or 4 times a year. That's just going to break my heart. But I hope that the Celtics win this year and next year. Just think of the championships with him, because in my eyes right now, the way it stands, I don't see Jaylen Brown finishing his career as a Boston Celtic.
Wow. I mean, that's surprising. I mean, I think they find a way to keep him, because you can keep him and go over the cap. You're just going to have to pay massive amounts of luxury tax. I don't know what the tax appetite is for the Celtic organization.
Yeah, they can't. They can't because they got contracts with Drew. They got contracts with Drew.
Right. This is their draft pick, so that they can go, like with Drew Holiday, you could still sign him, but I think the rules are different from somebody like him. But if it came down to the man, I would be really surprised if they would keep a 34-year-old Drew Holiday and get rid of a 28-year-old Jaylen Brown. That would be surprising. I think if they're going into their prime, Tatum and Brown could go on a roll here with ancillary parts. But to trust an aging Holiday and an injury-prone Porzingis for the foreseeable future over Jaylen Brown would scare me. But anything can happen. But I do think, like, I know in your mind, if you trade Jaylen Brown, you want the best possible assets. But I don't think they would do him dirty. And I think they would they wouldn't trade him to like a scrub team that's going to give him high draft picks. I don't think they would trade him to the Wizards or the Pistons. I think they have too much respect for him. I could see them trading him to OKC with their 11 number one picks or somebody good so that he's in an advantageous position for himself.
Yeah, maybe go.
I think that would be the situation, maybe for 5 number ones since they have so many of them. But man, that would be sad for you because I know how much you like Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, and, as much
to
as
to have to make the decision, that's almost like the Warriors 7 years ago deciding, we're going to keep Steph, but we're going to let Klay go 7 years ago. They're still together, even if that's probably going to come to an end. They're still together. And I think Boston somehow finds a way to keep your two together. But that would be shocking to me. It would certainly change the dynamic of that team if it's just Tatum, Holiday, Porzingis, and White. That's a big piece in Jaylen Brown.
Yeah.
To lose.
So yeah, it would be. I mean,
you're just trying to create extra urgency to get that title this year.
No, I just believe them. I mean, there was a stat this year. I mean, the Celtics are 10-0 when Jaylen Brown is not in the lineup. I mean, that just goes to the fact that the Celtics as a whole are still a very, very good team. And like I mentioned before, with just the two of them, they can get there. It's a struggle, but they never got over the hump. And I think the Golden State Warriors are the model that you do not want to follow. I really think that...
they won 4 championships.
No, I'm talking about after the contracts were paid, when they paid all their...
all the stars.
All their ancillary guys, you know, and whatnot. They kept them, all those three big ones. It just didn't work out. I see the Golden State Warriors, you know, on lean times. I already heard that Klay Thompson is talking to the Miami Heat right now, you know, for next year. So that seems like
he's come on strong in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, he's still got talent. I mean, he can still shoot. He'll be the Ray Allen when Ray Allen went to Miami and they won a championship over there.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got that skill. But I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I would always think that number 7 would be a jersey that I could keep forever in my closet. But I don't know. I don't know. There's too many rumors out there right now from reporters in the Boston area that, you know, basically do this for a living. So I hope I'm wrong.
I hope for your sake you're wrong, too, because I don't want you to be sad. All right, that's going to wrap up our show. Another thing that's happening next week, one of Ernie's favorite weekends of the year, the Masters.
Yes.
The Masters will be next weekend. Although I really haven't cared about the Masters in quite a while. Apparently Tiger Woods is going to try to play. He's trying to eye not getting cut. So we'll see how that happens. Of course, we'll cover the results next week. Again, check us out on social media, Sports Rivals Podcast on IG and Facebook, Sports Rivals Pod on Twitter or X. We are part of the Hawaii Sports Radio Network. You can check us out. Our podcast is available on HawaiiSportsRadio.com. That's HISportsRadio.com. And until next week, the Sports Rivals are out.
Thank you for joining us on the Sports Rivals podcast. Check us out on social media at Sports Rivals Podcast on Instagram and at Sports Rivals Pod on Twitter, where you can share topics you'd like to hear.